Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 116, Undoing the Ego, October 19th, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
We found out that suffering, that the human dilemma, the core of the suffering comes from a mistaken sense of self. It comes from identifying with the ego. And we don't mean the ego in psychological terms, definition of the ego. We're talking about the spiritual definition of ego. It's the belief in a separated sense of self, that everybody's separate from everything and everybody else. And this is the number one saboteur that all of us are facing.
That was the voice of one of today's guests, Nook Sanchez. Nook Sanchez and her collaborator, Thomas Vieira, are authors of the 2007 book, Take Me to Truth, Undoing the Ego. According to their website, Australian-born Nook Sanchez has always been driven to seek the truth, expose it, and simplify the pathway for others to follow. Initially, this drive led her to become internationally recognized within the cosmetic industry. Nook pioneered a revolutionary concept for esteem-enhancing cosmetic application. Her holistic feature-focusing technique was aimed at giving all women over the age of 25 years the opportunity to look their very natural best. Her findings led to publication of a book and the formation of her cosmetics company. The website goes on to say, having blazed a pathway in cosmetics, Nook retired from the industry to live in New Mexico and dedicated herself to pursuing and teaching ego release. In 1990, after being introduced to A Course in Miracles, Nook and her small spiritual family embarked upon learning the six stages of the development of trust. The 15-year journey of awakening led to her experience and understanding of the mechanism of the ego, how, why, when, and where we sabotage ourselves. Nook and Tomas learned how to enter the void, hold the faith, and see the face of truth. Their discoveries led them to simplify A Course in Miracles' miraculous formula for removing the obstacles that obscure love's presence in our daily lives. A simple and powerfully transformative six-stage spiritual navigation guide is the culmination of their work together. Now, here's the interview. Nook Sanchez and Thomas Vieira, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
G'day, David. It's a pleasure to be on here today.
Hi, David.
Well, this is unique. You know, I haven't often interviewed two people at a time. I think I did that once before, and this will be episode 116,
and it'll
wow. Yeah, it'll be that's a long time running.
Yes, it has been. So, and I've been eager to talk to you. I have a copy of your book, and I've been reading through it, and very much enjoying it. So, I know that
you're
both authors and you're workshop leaders. How would you describe yourselves? Do you think of yourselves as spiritual teachers, as gurus, enlightened persons, or what?
Probably none of the above.
Okay.
I reckon the closest definition, David, would be purely that as a result of our journey, and as we say in Australia, traveling up so many dry gullies in search of the truth, that If there was any title, it would be that we're just keen to share. So we're about sharing our experience with others. And hopefully if that helps to collapse time in terms of, you know, other people getting aha moments and fast tracking their learning, well, terrific.
Okay. Well, speaking of sharing, that gets us off to a good start. Share with us the story of how you came to write your book and how you came to be called to this work.
Yeah, great question, David. Well, it all began a long, long time ago, and I know we don't have that much time, but Thomas and I met 1984, and we made an unusual commitment. And the commitment, when we met, we fell in love just like anybody else would, and we had no idea why we met. We had, except that we loved each other and we wanted to pursue the normal romantic goals, which is to get married and have a child and all that sort of thing and maybe form a business. But during our first 2 years together, we got to the point where we realized that because we had such dysfunctional backgrounds, and that's the truth, both Thomas and I, mm-hmm. we realized that we wanted a better way. We wanted another way to love each other and to have a much better life because we had suffered greatly with a dysfunctional past. I don't think there's anybody alive that doesn't have some form of dysfunction, but we really had a lot of it.
Okay.
And together with the relationships that we'd had in the past, they were all failures. So we did make a commitment. I think it was about late 1985, we made an unusual commitment. We committed to each other. We said, look, under whatever circumstances may occur, no matter who might come into our lives, no matter what situations or circumstances may occur, that we would stick by each other, all right?
Yes.
Now, this is just a year before we got married. In other words, what we did is we made a higher commitment. We didn't realize exactly what we did, but we did ask, looking back, we asked for God or the source or whatever you might call it to actually come into the relationship and transform us, transform our minds, and in the process, transform our relationships. Now, I'll fast track it to 1990. We were given a book called A Course in Miracles, which is a non-dual, a contemporary spiritual teaching, non-dual metaphysics. And we read the book and were absolutely drawn into, improving our lives from that. So we embarked upon a 17-year experiential journey, and a lot of that time we were led up dry gullies, and boy, did we suffer from making some wrong turns.
Hmm.
Because like anybody who starts on the spiritual path, you tend to make a lot of mistakes, and we did. And what we did is we learned from the mistakes we made and how to free ourselves of suffering. It was described by a lady called Helen Schuckman in the 60s, and it's become huge. Apparently there's around 2 million copies circulated around the world today. It's aimed at undoing, and I mean this, undoing the one cause of all suffering. That's what it's there for. There's just one cause, and it's a mistaken identity. It's a sense of separation. And, what it says, David, is it says basically this. It says that God is, all right? Now, God or the source, whatever you want to call it, is all love. There's nothing other than all love by God. So it poses a very logical argument here: is how is it possible that all love, God being all love, could make a reality, this reality that we think we're living in, that contains hatred, conflict, death, and everything temporary? So what it then goes on to say is that's impossible. All love would never make anything other than love. So Why are we suffering? Why do we die? Why do we have conflict? Why do we have pain? Why do we, why all these things? And explains it very, very simply. It's because this reality that we believe is real is actually a dream. That we collectively, from the oneness, we were all one. We were in perfection and all love, all joy. And what happens is we had a tiny mad idea to experience something other than oneness, called separation. And that's how time began. Well, time is an illusion as well. And quantum physics also explains that, it supports the theory that we actually make our reality. This is what the Course in Miracles says, is we projected a dream, and this is the life we're living now. Therefore, we only have one goal, and that is to wake from this dream.
And I think that there's one more thing here that's important. It's also about the reversal of cause and effect.
That's right.
Because we live this life believing that the effect, which is what we're projecting out into this world and we see around us, is the cause. And the cause is about reversing that. And if you like, taking back personal and global responsibility for the fact that we are creating all of this. And so therefore the solution in terms of the unrest and disease, etc., lies at the real cause, which is in the mind.
Okay.
And I might just add to that very quickly, as I was going to say about quantum physics, not that I know much about it, but I do know one thing, is that there is a term called the observer effect in quantum physics that says there is no reality until that reality is first perceived, which really supports the theory that Course in Miracles is saying, is that we projected this reality.
Okay, I've known about the Course, as I say, through various friends, but I've always had, I haven't gone through the Course myself, and I have a bit of an ambivalent attitude towards it, because on the one hand, I know people who tell me it's been transformative in their lives. On the other hand, because of my own early experiences with fundamentalist Christianity, I'm a bit put off by its New Testament orientation. Maybe your book is designed to put it on somewhat more neutral ground.
Thanks for saying that, David, because that's perfectly said what you've got there, because we shouldn't get hung up in dogma of any kind. And, you know, this book isn't about that. So here's the thing. It should be, does the stuff work?
Mm-hmm.
So first question is, is there a truth in the fact that all of us as humans have more than once a week this impending sense of doom, this fear, this suffering? And the answer is yes. So then the next question would be, well, if there was a way to fix this where you didn't have to take on board a whole bunch of religious dogma or anything else, but purely work through logically the steps to look at what causes suffering, and that you can take responsibility for that and step yourself through those and recognize the difference between peace and suffering, and then make those choices yourself, then go ahead and do it. And that's really what we're on about. So I'm glad you made that comment because, you know, it's not about getting badged as this or as that. It's about, hey, we've got something to share, which is our own personal experiences that have led us out of the dysfunction that we had, and we're keen to share it. And that's it, really.
Okay. Maybe we should talk a little bit about resistance. You know, I mentioned I was resistant to going through the Course in Miracles, and it seems like resistance is part of the process. On the one hand, we want all these things that you've been talking about, and yet there seems to be a part of us at the same time that holds back or resists. What's the source of our resistance, and what do you see that as playing an important role?
Yeah, I'll get Nookie to also talk about this as well. You're talking about resistance. Well, the book, in our book, Undoing the Ego, what we're talking about there is actually learning trust. And fundamentally, our ego believes that it is in charge of our life. It is playing the role of God, and that we should trust it. Now, if you like, we live our lives, if we were a computer program, the default position is the ego, which is always coming from lack, coming from fear, coming from insecurity. And so, therefore, we spend our life on the outside, continually chasing, trying to acquire, trying to avoid, trying to resist, because we don't want to look at that pain, because the default position is we're not enough. So I don't know if that goes some way to looking at this. But the other side is that, you know, this is almost like one of those Rumsfeld sayings, right? You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned looking at our pain. Is that an important part of the process? Personally, I think it is important to look at our pain. Is that also a part of your approach?
I think I think it can be overvalued in mm-hmm. terms of looking at our pain, but I think it's useful in terms of an indicator, because I think each of us has a wounding, whatever the terminology you want to have, that's unique, or and it seems that our life travels in patterns that keeps having a link back to whatever was our particular wounding. So, in other words, it's actually a doorway or a portal to our healing. So I think in that sense, it is important. But what I wanted to say just there was that distrust that you were talking about is based on our, first of all, we're asked to leave a system that we know, that the ego system is our default position in this life. Mm-hmm. And yet, what we're talking about is learning trust, which is learning that there is a divine will that's at play, and it has your best interests at heart. But if we've never known that and never experienced that, of course there is distrust, and of course there is discomfort and resistance to letting go.
Okay. You have something in the book that you refer to as the PIQ formula. Nook, maybe you can take us through that.
Sure, I'll let you do that.
Sure. This is a tool that that really does help, we found, for ourselves personally and for the many people that we've worked with in our workshops as well. And it's just a tool that you can use in the now moment as soon as you feel a loss of peace. And we do explain in the book that that the ego, as soon as there's a loss of peace, that is the ego, that's doubt. Doubt in the beneficence of our life, but doubt in the divine will. So as soon as there's, say, a feeling of resistance, a feeling of loss of peace, like in an argument or a conflict, or you might find yourself rushing into the city in your car and all of a sudden you get a flat tire and you're standing there going, damn, you know, I can't have this happening right now. You're resisting reality. Reality presents as a flat tire or an argument or whatever. It's in that moment we resist that. That's when we start to suffer. We start to doubt. So we're doing the opposite to trust. And it's sort of like a closed loop. It just feeds itself. So this is a tool. It's called the PIQ formula. And it asks us to get in contact with the now moment. So P in the PIQ formula represents presence. So it calls us back to the now moment, because in truth there's only the now. We've only ever been in the now, every moment of our life. There's never been not a now moment that's ever occurred. It's the problem is that mentally we're usually not present for the now moment. Mm-hmm. Each now moment we're either thinking about the past or we're planning the future, so we're not present to the now. And this is a problem when we're doing any real problem solving with spirit. So presence is calling you back to the now moment. This is the only moment that's real, and it's asking you to become the observer, right? Get yes. out of the emotion, have a look, be the observer, observe yourself in this particular instance, however uncomfortable you might feel. Mm-hmm. The next one is I, which stands for inquiry. This is radical self-inquiry, which we teach. It's remembering to question your thoughts, remembering the source of this uncomfortable projection. Because as we teach here, anything that's actually happening is a projection that's coming from your own mind. This is to teach you you're not a victim of anybody or any circumstance. It's like, as Thomas was saying before, cause and effect. Our mind is the cause. And everything else is the effect. So it sort of gives you that power back again and reinstates a little bit of peace again. Okay? It asks you what you're resisting in reality, why are you resisting it, and that allows the universal inspiration, is another term for, I guess, the God source, to come into your mind and reinterpret the situation for you. The next one is Q, which stands for quantum forgiveness. This is not your normal forgiveness. This is a different type of forgiveness. I might ask Tom to actually explain this. He explains this much better than me.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to ask about, because one of my prior guests was Dr. Fred Luskin, who's researched and written about the importance of forgiveness. And so I wanted to find out what you guys mean by quantum forgiveness.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess first let's establish the status quo, which is that forgiveness is based on you did something and it's real. So you did something and it hurt me. So what you did was real, and the hurt that I experienced is also real. And then forgiveness asked me to be big enough to forgive you for doing it, which still says that it was real, and I'm now going to be big enough to forgive you. So we've stamped the issue as real. In quantum forgiveness, what we're saying is that based on that concept that and the guidance around the fact that there is only one of us, and we're projecting it. So that means that what you're doing or seem to have done is really a part of me reflected back to myself.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, then when I'm extending forgiveness or quantum forgiveness, what I'm saying is that it's all a projection of my mind. Nothing really occurred. There's been no sin. And so it's about overlooking. So it's not about me being bigger than you. It's about overlooking the event in its entirety and forgiving the fact that I created this scenario and this circumstance. Now, every time I do that, what I'm doing is I'm healing that unconscious guilt around that separation. And this is something we've removed ourselves from so far that most of us can't actually relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's reclaiming that sense of ourself. It's removing judgment from this world whenever we do that. And in so doing, we're actually forgiving ourselves. Yes, there's a side benefit that the person in question in this event is being forgiven. But that's actually the secondary issue. The first issue is about, oh, what's presenting here is some part of my unowned trait, unconsciously projected outward.
Mm-hmm.
Let me reclaim that by overlooking it.
Okay. I might qualify that, David, very quickly, because when I first heard this, I was quite threatened by this idea, because my argument was I was abused as a child. All right? Now, if
yes.
I quantum forgive my abuser, who was a teacher, and I was 8 years old, if I forgive him, then where do I stand? I can't just say that didn't happen, all right?
Right.
So what we're saying here is that, okay, at the level of form, which is the level of the world that we're living in, look at this, I was abused by that teacher, okay? But as I grew and became more awakened spiritually, I realized that that teacher could not have abused me at the age of 8 had he not been totally, absolutely unconscious. In other words, he was acting fully from his mistaken identity. If he'd been awakened, he would never have done that. All right? So at the level of form, that act did happen. I had to heal. I had to have some psychotherapy back in the past to help to heal that. All that had to be done in form. But at the level of spirit, which is the level we're talking about, at the highest of levels, I see that he was asleep. He was absolutely unconscious. So I can forgive that totally and extend that. Does that make sense to you, David?
Yes, it does. It does. And in a sense, it sounds like you're talking about, ultimately, it comes down to a form of self-forgiveness. Is that right
exactly.
or not?
Exactly. It's,
very much.
I mean, it
mm-hmm.
runs on this very, very simple principle, which is whatever we give, and that means everything, we receive.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So every time we give quantum forgiveness at the level, at the highest of levels, right, what we're actually doing is we're undoing a great chunk of that unconscious guilt that A Course in Miracles calls the ego. And it frees us. And that's what allows miracles to occur and infinite possibilities that were previously not available to us to actually flow into our lives.
Because we would be imprisoned by our prejudice and by our judgments. So forgiveness is very much the key, because we understand that all that we give, we receive.
Yes, yes. You refer to, Nook, you were saying that if your teacher had been more enlightened, there's no way that he could have done that. And so that raises the question of the whole concept of enlightenment, you know, of an enlightened being. Where are you with that idea?
What was that last thing you said?
about the idea of a person being, quotes, enlightened in some kind of ultimate sense.
So you're asking, what do I define enlightenment as?
Yes, or do you think that there is some end state of enlightenment that people can attain in this life? That
this is what we're doing in the book. We're actually giving a six-stage map. It's a spiritual navigation guide for people to follow and to let them know that, okay, let's be honest here, it's not easy. If anybody says that the path to enlightenment is easy, they're lying.
Yes.
Because the first thing that has to go before any light can be returned to our mind is the darkness. So we have to undo the darkness. And this is another thing I might say here, and I think you might have seen this yourself with the people that you've come into contact with, is there are quite a few teachers in the world today, spiritual teachers today, that we've realized are stage enlightened and not state enlightened. The difference is that anybody can have a stage enlightenment. Anybody can go into a fantastic point of revelation with God, all there is. They can actually have a state enlightenment I'm talking about. They can have a state where they've gone into meditation, they've met with the face of God, come out of that and have a year or two or three or whatever, thinking that they're enlightened. Well, what I'm saying here is that's just a state. It doesn't mean once you've reached the top of the mountain with the state, it doesn't mean that you're going to stay there, nor does it mean that you can actually lead anybody to that state. Right?
Yes.
What we've seen, and we explain this in the book in depth, is that what we've seen is it is a process. We're in this body. We're in this world. We're in gravity, all right? We're in time. And we have to actually work through stages, and this can take years to do. And it's stages of the development of trust, which equals the stages of undoing the only block there is to the awareness of love's presence. Because once we undo that block, which is the ego, there's only one thing left. It's like you, David, you are pure light. At your essence, that's all you are. David, as David knows himself, doesn't really exist. Nook, as Nook knows herself, doesn't really exist. And this is the process that we go to find as we go through the stages of enlightenment. You have to, if you've gone to a state of enlightenment and found enlightenment in some meditation or a revelation, you've got to come back down the mountain and join the real world and start on in the process of undoing the ego. And this is what we talk about. Does that help?
Yes, it does. It does. And I'm always remembering the Zen saying that before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water, and after enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. I mean, as long as we're embodied here, there's a certain level that we still have to deal with.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I'd like to add to this is that somewhere when we use that term enlightenment,
mm-hmm.
we use it in the same way that might be connected in religious terms or spirituality terms with the Buddha, Jesus, whatever. Immediately our eyes avert upwards to the sky.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this kind of, oh, this is, only a few can achieve this, and what these guys have done, it's like inhuman and nobody can do it. And,
yes.
Few can achieve. And yet the whole deal was, in my mind, and I can only speak from the sense of actually being raised as a Roman Catholic,
okay,
was that my interpretation now, having done my journey, is that Jesus would be pissed because the whole idea was to come here and show that, hey, I'm just one of you guys and we can all do this. And it's no big deal in the sense that all it is undoing the illusion of the self that we think we are, guys. That's all it's about.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've done is elevated this guy to this stage here that, again, is actually the ego's work to try and separate us, to try and show us that it's unattainable and we are but mere mortals.
Yes. Now, Nook referred to meditation, I think, at one point. What role does meditation play in your approach?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I have to tell you, quite honestly, that I tried to meditate for 10 years, David, with very little success. And the reason for that, and I didn't find this out till later, much later, when I had a series of visions that actually told me what was happening, was that I already lived in a state of contemplation. All right?
Yes.
I had, on a daily basis, I had huge chunks of time regularly where I was living in the now moment, in contact with essence or with the universal inspiration. So it was like I was having an open-eyed meditation experience for most of my days during that 10-year period, and yet I was still getting down on myself and getting hard on myself about not being able to actually do conventional meditation. So what we found, and we do say this in the book, is that, hey, go with the flow. If you're not the type that can meditate, then simply use the formula here, which is presence, inquiry, and quantum forgiveness. The more and more you can stay in the now moment while you're awake, while your eyes are open, you're working, in interaction with other people, then you're in spirit.
Now, that really works for me.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm glad to hear that.
That really resonates because that is something that I feel that I do work at and have worked at for some time. And I'm not sure that the sitting meditation really does work for me. So I really feel reaffirmed in what you've just said.
And I'm in the same boat as that. I couldn't do that. And I guess, you know, hopefully for some of your listeners that can't do that, that they can at least feel, oh, right, well, at least I'm not wrong, or this isn't something off with me, you know?
Yes, yes. I've been hearing a lot about this video called The Secret, which I have not seen, but I've heard enough about it to feel like I know something about, you know, what it's about. And everyone's talking about it, and I hear they've been on Oprah. Do you think you're saying, I don't know if you've seen it or not, are you saying something similar, or do you have a different viewpoint?
Yes, I did see it, David. Yes, I did. And, you know, 15 years ago, I would have jumped in, boots and all, and gone, my God, this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to manifest everything that I want. Okay?
Yes.
And I'm going to help others manifest everything they want. But now, with a bit more wisdom, I realize just who is doing all this manifesting. And the answer to that is, sadly, the ego. Right?
Yes, because there's a very materialistic kind of ambition, it seems to me, with that.
That's correct. And I think even deeper than that, and, mm-hmm. and probably more dangerously than that, is that the ego itself, as we said before, it's a separated sense of self. And what it does is it believes in lack. It believes in scarcity. That's part of its foundation. It believes in separation and scarcity. And what it does, it has a mantra, and its mantra is seek and do not find. In other words, seek and never find. So it doesn't know its own best interest. So if we enter trying to manifest the life we want, you know, the love of our life, the soulmate, the great car, you know, the fantastic business, our creative expression, whatever it is we think we want. The thing is that what's going to happen is that's going to run from the ego unless you've handed that over to spirit. The ego will create a wonderful partner, a soulmate, and maybe 12 months later you might find out you have cancer. All right? Mm-hmm. See, it gives on the one hand and it takes on the other.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the ego does it.
Okay.
So I'm just saying that if we're going to manifest from the idea of the secret, which is the law of attraction, we have to. If we really want to do that, what we do is we undo the ego first, hand that all over to the universal inspiration, and anything we really need is going to be given to us and more than we could possibly have imagined.
Okay. In your view, what happens to the people who don't do the inner work for whatever reason? Are they banished to some sort of New Age hell or a series of unpleasant reincarnations?
I don't know. I reckon that we just keep going around and around, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I mean, our view is, or our belief is, that eventually we're all going home because we actually are still home. Because this is just a dream. So it's like we fell asleep, and just as in a dream, we're acting this out as if it's all real. But eventually you do wake from the dream. So I think eventually we will all wake from the dream. Where Nook and I got to was to a level of suffering and pain, carrying our bloody baggage around with all this dysfunction, that we just said, look, no, that's enough now. Come on. I don't know how many lives I've lived or whatever, and I'm not into that by any stretch of imagination. But it was just that that's enough, you know. This has gone on far too long. So if there's some way I can shortcut this, then that's the ticket for me.
Yeah, okay. Now, I guess you're both originally Australian. Listeners might be interested to know that as we're speaking, you're actually in Arizona. Is that going to be?
Yeah, we're over here at the moment.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm in the States with Nookie at the moment. And as part of, I guess, that relationship stuff that Nookie was talking about and our journey, and I don't know that we quite actually finished that, but but I'm actually staying here with Nook and her husband, Nick. Isn't that cool?
That's too much. Nook and Nick.
I guess, Yeah, and you were asking about our journey at the start, David, and that was part of why that's been part of the journey of this book was that that original vow was to never let anything or anyone come between us. Now, and you'd appreciate this, David, with your background, but my thing was because of the childhood I had where I was given away to an aunt to be raised, extreme fear of abandonment, insecurity.
I can imagine.
Those things led to behaviors in, what's that word that begins with M?
Misogynistic
ways.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, I had all of that stuff to contend with. And then we came across A Course in Miracles, which says none of that is true. And in fact, what you've got to do is extend love. Well, that was the last thing I wanted to do. So that's just to give your listeners something to see where we were coming from. But the journey led us to a point, David, where we realized that the ego actually hid or could still hide in the form of our relationship, which was the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we decided was we said, hey, either this stuff is true or it's not, but we can't live in a position. We've explored enough dry gullies. Let's take this to the max. And hey, I'm not advocating this for anybody. I'm just saying in our case, because of our particular dance, if you like, where Nook danced as the victim, I danced as the perpetrator, we had to get it. We said, let's undo this totally and see if it's true. So we gave up the relationship. We gave up the marriage to save our relationship, David.
Yes, and now you work together as very close collaborators.
Well, more than that. Mm-hmm. More than that. I we love each other, you know?
Yes.
And if I go back to that stage where we made that vow to each other, if you had told me that I could have this, and yet in this form, which is actually Nook's remarried, I would say you have got to be kidding. That's a joke. But it's a miracle. It has happened, and it's real. And I experienced the love and the unconditional acceptance that I've always craved.
That's wonderful. So that is a miracle.
It is,
yeah.
David, yeah. Too. It's just we have the most absolutely inspiring relationship. And I do. We've had quite a bit of feedback just recently from a couple of our workshops, one in Santa Fe and one in New York City, and the people they gave. I mean, it was very humbling. They were just saying that the love that we have would just you could feel it right through the room. I've never heard that before, but that was such a lovely mirror to us. Just to prove, I guess, to confirm that all we went through really does lead to true unconditional love.
Well, boy, I could just go on talking to the both of you for quite a bit more time, but we probably need to wind it down. So let me ask you, what's your hope for the book? What do you hope people will get out of it?
If it can shorten time, which we believe that it can, then we've done the job, you know?
Yes, we want it to end, to help to end people's suffering, people's sense of separation, because we went through a absolute nightmare, David. Don't want anybody else to have to go through such a nightmare for so long with so much confusion. Hopefully this is going to help to lift them up and really deliver them to their real core, which is light.
And I think the keywords are so long because, you know, pain, as we were talking before, pain is important because unfortunately most of us don't want to get on the front foot. So it's only when we've had enough pain. So we hope this book is for those who have had enough pain, but they can shorten the journey because they're not going up as many dry gullies as we did.
Okay.
That's right. And I just want to say too, David, we have a website. People might find there's some very interesting tools on our website as well. It's takemetotruth.com.
And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Nook and Tomas, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
It was such a pleasure.
Okay. Well, we did it.
Hey. I want to come back and do this with you some more because I love your questioning, David.
Thank you.
Now, well, I think because you have that background, you're able to frame the questions. It's wonderful. So anytime you want to do this again, we're up for it.
Okay, well, that sounds great. You know, mostly I get such wonderful feedback from you listeners, and I included a little bit of the conversation after the interview because I wanted to share with you the wonderful feedback that I also often get from guests after the interview is over because they report that they feel well served by the interview experience, and that's important to me too. So I wanted to share that with you. I really enjoyed speaking with Nook and Tomas. One of the things I enjoyed about their approach and in the interview was their willingness to talk about some of the hard times in their life and that they had to confront difficult things in their own personalities and in their relationship. And I think Nook even made reference to having been in psychotherapy. And to me, that's a good fit with the model that Joseph Campbell presents, which, as you know, if you've been listening for any length of time, I've been quite influenced by that model. And what the perennial wisdom of the mythologies from around the world tell us is that the journey up begins with the journey down, so that the spiritual journey, the desire to find oneness with God or higher consciousness, really begins with confronting our shadow, confronting our fears, confronting the darkest elements. And it's in the process of going down and clearing that stuff out that we can then begin the journey up, if you will. Let me give a plug to their website once again. You'll find it at www.takemetotruth.com. And in the conversation that we had at the end of the interview, I also found out that they're going to be doing a workshop fairly soon in Portland, Oregon. So if you're anywhere in the Portland, Oregon area and you think you might be interested, go to their website and I would imagine you could find some information about that as well as other workshops there.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. And Dr. Dave is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Exploring our spirit and our psyche, we are learning to unwind. And Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. We're all in your mind. We're all in your mind.
Yes, indeed. We are all in your mind, and you are all definitely in my mind. I was just taking a look at our listener poll on the Shrink Wrap Radio website, and right now, 58% say they'd like it if a shrink wrap radio t-shirt were available. Now, the absolute number of people who have taken the poll is still small, so let me hear from you. I'll have to take a look into what's possible in terms of being able to offer a t-shirt on the site. I also dropped in to lurk at the Shrink Wrap Radio Fan Club. It's on Facebook, and there is a link to it in the green gutter area on the right side of the Shrink Wrap Radio website. I took a peek there just now, and I see 23 people have joined the fan club, and many have made comments. The fan club was created by listener Susie, and it's a great place for you to dialogue with other listeners, and I hope will become a sort of community watering hole for the Shrink Wrap Radio community. I've not posted anything there myself. To tell you the truth, I'm not very good at figuring out how to use these social networking sites. And also, I have my say here, and I want you listeners to have a chance to have your say there and to network with one another without my input. And Susie, if you're listening, I noticed that the interest area is described as philosophy, and I'm wondering if it wouldn't be more accurate to describe it as psychology. So there's my little piece of input for that. I want to mention that there's a new interview up on my other podcast series, Wise Counsel. I spoke with Dr. Marcia Linehan, who is widely known as the founder of Dialectical Behavior Therapy, or DBT. It's an empirically validated form of psychotherapy that's used for treating people who have borderline personality disorder, suicidal people, and other people who are in severe and chronic psychological pain. Dialectical behavior therapy represents an integration of two traditions, which makes it very interesting. It's an integration of the cognitive behavioral therapy tradition, which is focused on developing technologies of change, and also of the mindfulness tradition that comes out of various spiritual practices, including Zen Buddhism and contemplative Christian practices, as well as perhaps the practice of the guests that we heard today. You'll find that interview along with a free written transcript at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. I was taking a look at our ongoing listener survey, and I see that about 13% of you are not subscribed to Shrink Wrap Radio. At least that's the case among those who took the survey. So if you're not subscribed, let me urge you to do so. It's quick and painless and costs nothing. And the benefit to you is that you'll automatically receive Shrink Wrap Radio on your computer and never miss an episode. One place you can subscribe is through Podshow at podshow.com, where you'll discover a whole raft of other excellent content, both video and audio. And another place you can subscribe is through iTunes, and there's a link on our site to that at shrinkwrapradio.com. I'm proud to be part of the Podshow lineup of podcasts, and they have also brought us GoDaddy as a sponsor. So remember to use the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy to get a discount on your next domain name or web hosting purchase at GoDaddy. I know many of you have already, and there are other GoDaddy discounts that you can find on our site. We have two new additions to our Frapper map. Jamie in Salt Lake City writes, "I'm an artist, and I love listening to Dr. Dave while I paint." Well, that's a new one, Jamie. We've heard about people driving in their cars, working out in the gym, going on walks, and listening while gardening. And now we have listening while painting. I wonder what other sorts of activities people listen while they're doing. To me, that's the great advantage of audio over video. And then we hear from Anne in Atlanta, Georgia, who writes, "I'm a criminal justice student and love Shrink Wrap Radio." Well, Anne, I love you for taking the time to write and say that. So if you're not on our map, there is a place on the Shrink Wrap Radio website where you can add yourself to the Shrink Wrap Radio Frapper map. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, I've spent some money and taken some steps to try to improve the audio quality of this podcast, and I got some feedback from podcaster Michael W. Dean suggesting that it would sound even better if I were to encode it at a higher bit rate. That will make it take longer to download, but make the quality sound better. So I'm going to encode this one at a much higher bit rate, at 128 kilobits per second. I think that's what it is. And let me know if you notice the difference, either for better or for worse.
Hi, my name is Judy from County Cork, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
I love that Irish lilt. And that's a signal to dip into our email bag. First, we hear from Michael, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I found the rap theme you included in one of your recent programs curious and instantly off-putting. I do understand the temptation to consider such a theme with its obvious connection to your show's Shrink Wrap Radio title, but have you considered rap's disturbingly hateful, misogynistic, black ghetto-centric message that is generally associated with rap? I realize that rap has become very popular these days and that it appears to be branching out and cleaning itself up, but I can't believe that your listeners would find a rap theme congruent with the program content, in spite of its relationship to the show's title." Well, Michael, I appreciate your taking time to write me this feedback, and I totally understand where you're coming from. Not long after I started the show, I had the idea that some sort of rap-style jingle would be a good play off the show title, Shrink Wrap Radio. And clearly in your email, you indicate that you understand that. And I held off on the idea, though, thinking it might be offensive. And then more recently, for whatever reason, I'm not sure, some kind of ebullience, I decided to go ahead with the idea, but I instructed Jeff Smith to come up with something that was on the soft side of rap. I definitely agree with all the negative connotations you've alluded to, Michael. I share many of them as well. At the same time, as you note, rap has spread into lots of areas of the culture, and it's not all hateful and misogynistic. Even some Christian music has taken up the genre. So as I say, I commissioned Jeff Smith to put my words to music. Yes, I have to take responsibility for the words, and I asked Jeff to give it a soft rather than hard-edged feel. I like what he came up with, but I certainly don't want to offend my listeners. So I've heard from Michael on this issue, but I need to know whether it's a widely shared concern or not. So I'll play the jingle Michael is referring to right now, and I hope others of you will let me know where you stand on it. I should mention I'd only intended to play it occasionally, maybe about once every fourth show, since I have four different jingles now. So here it is. Let me know what you think.
That's right. Shrink Wrap Radio. Coming at you now. Yo, everybody, let's get down. There's a new MC in town. Talking psychology interviews. Dr. Dave is all the rave. Ain't no slouch on the digital couch. He's on the pod. Podcast got the bod. Yeah. You wanna be in the know? No. Talking Shrink Wrap Radio. Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. I'm talking Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. I'm talking Shrink Wrap Radio. Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. All right.
So there you have it. And rightly or wrongly, I guess also in the back of my mind was the idea that it might appeal to my younger listeners. So again, let me know what you think. Lloyd, whom you'll recognize as a longtime listener and contributor from Down Under, writes to comment on the recent show on the commercialization of childhood with Dr. Alan Kanner. And Lloyd writes, "Hi Dave, how you doing? I personally am going to let my child watch whatever he wants. He's going to get bombarded with adverts eventually, so best prepare him now. Yes, it makes him cynical about the world, but that would just make him more like his father. I want him to be cynical because that is the appropriate and healthy reaction to our current society. No use hiding the hard truths. Best regards, Lloyd." All right, Lloyd. Next we hear from Gary, who is a listener that I met at the Dream Conference, and he writes, "Hello, I'm finally sitting down to write you after the IASD conference back in July. It was great meeting you and working with you in Gail Delaney's workshop. I promised you a name or two of people who you might want to interview. Anne Cornell, focusing instructor and student of Eugene Gendlin. You can say that I sent you." And then he sends me to her website, which is at focusingresources.com. And he also recommends Dr. Stephen Heller, Jungian lecturer and author and Gnostic bishop. You can say that I sent you. And that's at gnosis.org. That's G-N-O-S-I-S.org. That's it for now. Keep up your great work, Gary. Gary, it was wonderful running into you at the Dream Conference. And I've added those possible guests to my long to-do list. And here's another longtime listener, frequent contributor, whom I refer to as Ann the Man. He writes, "Hi, David. On account of the holidays and some long-winding podcast series in history, I'm taking on, On account of the holidays and some long, maybe he means long-winded podcast series on history that I've taken on, I've fallen a bit behind with Shrink Wrap Radio. So only now have I come around to listening to the show where you visit the Psychology Club at San Joaquin Valley Delta Community College. Dave, you're great. I admire the natural balance you handle the whole lecture with. And then something magical happens. You connect with the group, and it's just such a pleasure to listen in. Anyway, I wrote about it in my blog, as usual. And you can all check out Anna's blog at annisaman.blogspot.com. And thank you for that contribution and that encouragement. I was a little uncertain about, you know, recording that and offering that up as a podcast, but I've gotten a couple of favorable reviews from listeners, so I feel encouraged. Let's see. Next, I hear from Alex. I received several emails in response to a mass emailing that I sent out to everybody who had taken the survey to let them know that. Let me start again. I got interrupted. When you take the survey, one of the things I've promised people who take the survey is that they would receive access to a bonus, some bonus content of a lecture that I gave some years ago on dreams. And I realized due to some listener feedback that some people weren't getting that. I think it happened when we shifted from a regular kind of website format to more of the blog format, and that link got broken. So since I couldn't tell who had received it and who hadn't, I sent out a mass email to everybody whose email address I had on the survey, sending them that link. And so I've heard back from a number of you, some of you saying, yeah, I already got the link, thanks anyway, and other people who were just getting it for the first time. And also, a lot of those emails that I sent out bounced because either people put in maybe bad email addresses because they're privacy fears, I don't know, or their email addresses changed, or they made a mistake, I don't know. But it's too bad. If they wanted to hear from me, they're not going to be able to because of the bad email addresses. But at any rate, I'm going to read a couple emails that were in response to that. So, for example, here's one that starts, "Hello, Dr. Dave. Thank you for your thoughtfulness. I had received the bonus audio file when I took the survey. It was excellent to listen to. The audio quality of your podcast has improved greatly since I took the survey, and it's great to always find something new and inspiring in your show. I don't imagine the world of podcast without Shrink Wrap Radio. Have a great day, Alex." And I noticed in his signature that Alex has a blog, and I went to it. There are beautiful pictures there. I'm not sure what the language is. I'm guessing it might be Portuguese. I'm not sure. But it's worth a visit just to see the photos at www.alexrazvan, Alex Razvan, at .blogspot.com. That's www.alexrazvan.blogspot.com. And next I hear from Gord, who writes, "Thanks, Dr. Dave. Over the last several years, I've listened to every one of your podcasts from start to finish." Wow, thank you. What you are doing is interesting indeed, and while I might not agree with a particular speaker or point of view, the time I've invested in listening always seems worthwhile. Thanks for giving the way you do. It's a wonderful contribution to the lives of many. I've downloaded the MP3 from the bonus link and will definitely listen to it. Thanks again for your kindness, Gord. Best regards, Gord. Gord, thanks for that support, encouragement. It means a lot to me. Next, we hear from Ava. Hi, Dr. Dave. I did receive the bonus link and thoroughly enjoyed the talk you gave. I love your podcast and listen to it on a regular basis during my commute to work as a technical writer in a high-tech company. The commute is usually about 50 minutes, usually enough time for an entire show. I'm one of your armchair psychologist listeners. One of my favorite shows was your interview with a man named Anne, or Anna. As a former Canadian living in Israel, I could really identify. Keep up the good work, Ava. So I think that better wrap it up for today, inasmuch as we've already exceeded Ava's commute time. As always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype where our name is ShrinkPod, or you're encouraged to leave voice messages on MyChingo. I haven't gotten one of those in a long time, and you'll find a link to that on our ShrinkWrap Radio website. And in the U.S., you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to Nook Sanchez and Tomas Vieira for taking us to truth. Next week, I'll be traveling to Vancouver, Canada, to attend the Qualitative Research Consultants Association annual convention, where I'll be one of the presenters and presenting on podcasting, as a matter of fact. And I'll be in Vancouver for a week, so I'm not sure when the next show will come out or who my guest or guests will be. I might conduct interviews at the conference, so you'll just have to wait and see. It'll just have to be a surprise. So that's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.